Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Open your free iHeart app, search R&B Money Podcast, and start listening. Only on the Black Effect Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it's Maggie Lawson. Remember when I said there would be a part two to the Steve Franks episode of The Psychologists Are In? Well, here it is. I think I'm just going to call this one the pineapple episode. There's a lot of pineapple goodness in this episode, among many other things. So enjoy this second part of my Steve Franks interview, which was such a joy. So Steve.
Yes, Maggie.
Let's start from the very beginning.
But here's the thing. You aren't there at the very beginning, so it's less interesting. So why don't we skip that part?
No. Well, okay. We can skip certain parts. But I want to hear how you came up with this idea, where it began, and then the whole process you had. But we'll go along. So start at the beginning. How did you come up with Psych?
Well, the germ of the idea came years before I ever met Kelly Kolchak, who is our great executive producer and the original first person who was there who said, oh my gosh, this is a great idea. But I wrote a movie called Big Daddy that got made. It was the first script that I sold, and I wrote it while working at the Tiki Room at Disneyland. And
hold on. What?
It's just one of those things.
Now I have to hear how that started.
So many movies are written by people working in the Tiki Room. I can't begin to list them all.
It's a magical room for writers, huh?
But I was in grad school, and our other amazing executive producer, Chris Hanzy, who has spent the last few months with us up in Canada, executive producing the last one. We went to school together, and he went off to start to work in the business. And I continued grad school, and my grad school and college job was working at Disneyland. And I was on the Tiki Room, which was my favorite of all attractions, because A, you didn't have to wear a hat. That was an amazing thing. So your hair wasn't smushed and ruined at the end of the day.
Of course, nobody likes hat head.
Yeah, exactly. And who doesn't like to wear white polyester pants and an orange, old tiki shirt? And you're right next to the Dole pineapple stand where you get Dole whips and all sorts of amazing things from the Dole pineapple people. And every 20 minutes, you hear the Dole pineapple film, which I could recite from front to back if I needed to right now. But just telling you about all the amazing advents in pineapple technology that the Dole pineapple people brought.
Is that where the original, did you take the pineapple along with you in the Psych adventure? Is this where the pineapple was born?
No, the Psych pineapple was born out of the mind of James Rodet, who just looks at a set and he saw, just like behind you, there was a pineapple set on top of the refrigerator by the people who made the set deck in Gus's apartment. One of the few times we ever actually went to Gus's apartment in the run of the show, in however many episodes we did. I think it's more than 3,000.
At least 3,000.
But James just picked up a pineapple and said, you want me to slice this up for the road?
Yes.
And he was so tickled by it. And you just never know what James is going to be tickled by. So we did it several times on each of the takes just because we thought it was funny. And it was in the cut and it was out of the cut. And we kept, we had to trim it. We had to tighten it. We had to lose 12 seconds in the show.
Oh, my God.
And finally, at the end, we were just looking at it. And James loved that so much. Let's just leave you want me to slice this pineapple up for the road, which it wasn't even necessarily a joke. It was just, it's funny for him to hold up a pineapple.
Yeah.
And it just became one of those things that you watch and go, hey, remember that thing with the pineapple? That was funny. And then we put it in the Spelling Bee episode, which is the second one, directed by Mel Damsky. I'm just going to say Mel Damsky's name early on.
Love it. Love bringing Mel into the mix early. Mel was around with us for so long. So
yeah, exactly.
He deserves to be here.
Yeah. So that was, that's where the pineapple came from. So it was born out of the mind of James Rodet, but I felt like the assist was, I had a history with pineapples.
I feel like the pineapples were speaking to you then. So go back to the Tiki Room and the Dole pineapples and getting to this idea?
Well, the great thing about the Tiki Room is it's a show. It's 20 minutes of audio animatronic birds. And and they've sliced it down a little bit since then. But it was an amazing place, A, to get out of the heat, B, if you needed a quick nap. But your job as the Tiki Room person was supposed to be, you go take a stick, a little bamboo stick, and you go over and you wake up Jose, the bird, and then you walk back to the seat and you just make sure that the animation doesn't break and spray water or hydraulic fluid when it was hydraulic fluid or all that. Or if people don't go crazy in the room.
Oh my God, this was your job?
This is my job.
I love this so much.
You know what? Here's the thing. At some point, maybe I go back to that job because it was that good.
I mean, it sounds pretty amazing. I think it was very fitting for you.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, yeah. Okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Open your free iHeart app, search R&B Money Podcast, and start listening only on the Black Effect Podcast Network.
But the
best thing about that ride is that it had its own restroom on site, and it had its own little office and break area. So instead of sitting in the chair, I would just quietly open the door to the office, cross my fingers that the animation didn't break or people went nuts and started destroying the room. And I brought my notebook and I just would write. And over the course of that, I wrote the movie that became Big Daddy. Which was fantastic. And out of all that, I learned a lot about pineapples. I appreciated the pineapples. And so it was a natural fit to A, incorporate the pineapple. I can't believe we did the pineapple story in the first 3 minutes. Here's a story I don't ever tell. So it's like an exclusive.
Oh, hang on, everyone. We're having an exclusive story from Steve Franks. I'm so excited.
I've already oversold it, but we used to get so bored at the Tiki Room because nothing ever happens there. And, you know, it ebbs and flows. It's back and forth with popularity. I love the music. I love the songs. They're all great. But we used to entertain ourselves. So we would actually, because we had a microphone there, we would actually add our own parts of the show. And so there were a bunch of plastic pineapples in the fountain. So we would actually do our own voices for the pineapples.
Oh my God.
One of them was called Peppy the Pineapple. And he was fear because his entire family had been eaten and destroyed by the people out at the juice bar.
Peppy was alone in the world.
and he was watching his family summarily be slaughtered and sliced up and served to people by the evil juice bar people out front, which was very fun and entertaining for us. And we never got a guest complaint about it. So that was wonderful.
And also kind of scary. Yeah.
It was, we always trying to walk that line of not like, you know, not like scaring the children too much. So we let them know that it was all fun and games. We also had a character which was Bob the chair, and he was a chair who was upset that someone was sitting on them.
Steve, where is your animated show of Bob the chair?
I know, it's always been a dream to do an animated show, and we've got those two characters. I mean, we created them with the course of some really smart and intelligent people there.
Sounds like
working the Tiki Room. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, so what was Bob the chair's job?
He was just upset someone was sitting on them. And that was really rude. And so he would start very muffled. And then we'd stand up and he's like, oh, and then he would complain about people coming in, just sitting on him indiscriminately. And the funny thing is the Tiki Room show would last 17 minutes and you're supposed to do a show every 20.
Uh-huh.
And then my supervisors would come down and they'd go, why are we only doing two shows an hour? It's like, shows shouldn't last 35 minutes. So we were just trying to give, what we were trying to do is just like what you're doing, is trying to give bonus content to the super fans because we loved people that would come to the Tiki Room because it wasn't as flashy as the other rides, but it was a nice and welcoming place and all the songs are great and all that. So that was just it. We were just providing bonus content to the people who were willing to come join us.
This sounds wonderful, and I'm sad that I missed it. I feel like we should go like have a psych field trip to the Tiki Room because this really does sound like where it all began.
That is exactly it. And we should talk about psych field trips later. Put that down in your notes. Have Devin.
I have them already. We're talking about the field trip. She's got it. I'm coming. Devin's here. Devin's coming on the field trip.
So, and I sold the script and it ended up getting made. It was exciting.
Big Daddy.
And then, yeah, Big Daddy to Columbia, which was
huge.
Well, it wasn't huge. It was like, literally the former president of the studio, Sid Gannis, he liked the script and they bought it and it was the lowest of lowest priorities. And it was nothing. And they gave me notes for rewrite. And I don't know what I did, but somehow I turned this low. They gave me a few notes and I didn't answer their notes. I just thought, oh, they're saying this because they didn't like this. And so I went around
their
notes
a little. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And for some reason they liked it. And I think also the worst thing you can do is give someone the exact note that they want. Cause then they're somehow not surprised by it,
right?
Or they go, oh wow, this is better. I don't know why, but it wasn't exactly what I said. Whatever it was, it worked out, and suddenly it became this exciting thing. And so Columbia had me come in, and they said, "Hey, what other ideas do you have?" And I'm like, "Oh gosh, what do I have?" So I made a list of like five ideas that I went in and pitched. They didn't like any of them, but one of them was fake psychic detective.
Oh my God.
And I thought, oh, this would be like an amazing, like Adam Sandler, Drew Barrymore movie.
Oh.
You know, this was, of course, me just saying, oh, wow, they were good in Wedding Singer together, right? It was sort of that idea of a guy who gets out of trouble, you know, in a courtroom by saying, yeah, I got this information. I can't tell you how I got it, but I'm psychic. And it went from there. They listened to all the ideas and they go, oh, thank you very much. They said, we don't like any of them. So,
wow.
And that was fine. And I went on and then I started doing television. I would do half hour shows from there. I sold a bunch of like ABC half hours, multicams.
Yeah.
My first thing I sold was an NBC half hour multicam, which was Warren Littlefield was the former president of the studio. It was his first thing. So I had a thing with like
first time. Oh my gosh. Totally.
They didn't quite yet know better than to just deal with some guy who just comes up with the oddball ideas. But so we made that pilot and that didn't go anywhere. And I did half hours for a few years and I'd always wanted to do a 1 hour because it wasn't my style.
Wait, what were the themes of your like half hours? What was it like? Was it like workplace? Was it family? What?
Of course, I did a lot of stuff with, because of Big Daddy. They're like, yeah. How about a guy, irresponsible guy who gets a kid?
Sure.
Like, okay, great. And I didn't have kids at that point. So it was like, I knew nothing about it except dealing with kids at Disneyland. And I enjoyed talking with them. And I never understood how you're supposed to talk to a kid, which, you know, I just treated them as an equal and,
right.
You know,
which
joke around with them.
Which is why they, I'm sure, loved you and why you got such great response from them. I mean, we had kids on our show too, like, because you talked to them like they were just not kids, adults, or at least just humans, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I got in trouble, actually. Go back to another Disneyland story. There was a kid who came by, and it was this really nice kid who came by and said, I just love the treehouse. And by the way, this just to add more to the Disneyland story, I'm sure you don't want this to be all about working at Disneyland.
Steve, I just want to hear all things Steve and how we got here.
So part of your rotation working at the Tiki Room is you start at the entrance and then you let people in and then make sure they aren't, at that point, you weren't allowed to eat in the Tiki Garden and you had to sweep up the Tiki Garden. And then you go in the show and then you would go down to the Swiss Family Treehouse, as it was called then. And you would just make sure that people, A, didn't bring food there or it didn't fall or anything.
Right, right.
That was
right.
Your job. It was that if the Tiki Room is the easiest job you can imagine, the Swiss Family Treehouse part of it was 10 times easier than that. And so there was this really nice kid who was out there and says, I'd love this treehouse. And I go, that's amazing. And it's like, you think they would ever sell the treehouse? And I go, and so I thought we were just riffing. And I go, yeah, I think they're pretty interested in getting rid of it.
Oh, Steve.
And he's all seriously. And I go, yeah, I'm sure they probably would want to find a good home for it. And he goes, you think I could have it? And I thought we were joking around. So I said, I'm sure they would consider it. You know, you should think about it.
How old is this kid? So,
I like 11 or 12. Oh. maybe younger, but
okay.
So they left and then he came back and he goes, hey, about this treehouse thing. And I go, yeah, I talked to my boss. and my boss is for it. But you know, I think they'd have to, you know, they need a background check and all this. And I keep thinking this kid's going to stop coming by. So he comes by and he goes, you know, how would they get the treehouse out? And I go, I don't know. I mean, I guess you'd have to hire a moving company. And so So I'm thinking we're just having this fun banter. Well, about 8:30 at night.
Oh, no.
This mom comes over dragging this kid, and she was not happy at all with me. And she just walked up to me and she goes, "Tell him he is not getting the treehouse." And I said, "I'm so sorry, ma'am." And I thought for sure she would go directly to City Hall and file a complaint about me for giving away the treehouse. But I had enjoyed the banter all day long.
It got you through the day.
Yes, exactly.
Even though that kid still tells the story of the day that he thought he was getting a treehouse from Disneyland. That
You know what? It might be someone who's ever seen the show. And they said, the guy from Psych tried to give me the treehouse. And by the way, and within a few years, they turned it into the Tarzan treehouse. So literally, I don't see a reason why that kid couldn't have had, you know, at least some of the treehouse.
He should have a piece of the tree, maybe like a nest or a branch.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There is a crow's nest and all sorts of thing. And
oh, really?
And
I was joking, but okay.
So it's a thing. And by the way, if you ever go to the treehouse, it's an amazing piece of craftsmanship of the fake leaves. 68 steps up, 69 down. You can count them. It's still accurate. Okay, so to finally finish that story, and I promise no more detours into Disneyland land.
It's okay.
It's years later, Kelly Kolchak went to work for Throughline, which is also Chris Hensie's company. And she's like, "What do you have?" And I said, "Well, I've always wanted to do 1 hour." And I pitched a handful of half hours. And then at the end, the last one on the list was, "Well, I had this thing and it's called Fake Psychic Detective." And Kelly was like, Oh my God, that's a show.
Thank you all for listening to this special mini episode of The Psychologists Are In with our creator, Steve Franks. Please feel free to message us on Instagram at The Psychologists Are In, our Twitter at Psychologist Pod. While you're at it, follow us on TikTok at The Psychologists Are In. We will see you next week. Thank you for listening.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro. That's what it felt like.
Open your free iHeart app, search R&B Money Podcast, and start listening. Only on the Black Effect Podcast Network.